Many consumers think that the dock fee is an official government fee. It's nothing. It's just a made-up name that is additional profit.
An Anchorage lawmaker takes aim at car dealer fees. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, January 14th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a pipeline watchdog group plans an audit.
It'll be useful to examine if there are similar outdated assumptions in any terminal contingency operations that need to be re-examined.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The legislature will go into this year's session next week with 132 bills and 7 constitutional amendments on the table, but a lot more are on the way. The second bundle of bills lawmakers have worked on since last year's session were released today. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
Legislators have given themselves a wide assortment of subjects to consider this year and next, with pre-filed bills ranging from election reform, where Anchorage Democrat Max Gruenberg wants to return to a nonpartisan single-ballot primary election, to a state education loan program for needed medical professionals. Proposed by Bethel's Bob Herron, that would provide doctors, nurses, dentists, and other professionals to underserved areas of the state. Another by Big Lake's Mark Newman would expand the use of deadly force for self-protection beyond home or business to, quote, any place where the person has a right to be. A bill that Homer's Paul Seaton has been unsuccessful with several times in the past is getting another chance. Seaton would prohibit mixing zones in freshwater spawning rivers. Anchorage Democrat Les Guerra has introduced a similar measure. The idea has met opposition in the past from miners fearing restrictions on new developments, such as the Pebble Mine. Federal elections could be changed with a bill by Anchorage Senator Hollis French. He's proposing the state sign on to a compact with other states that would elect the president based on a popular nationwide vote. And Anchorage's Kevin Meyer would prohibit the use of those automated, recorded, computer-fed, annoying telephone solicitations, even by political candidates. The session begins Tuesday afternoon. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
Governor Parnell today began lining up his bills for consideration during this year's session. At the top of the priorities released so far is a bill that will take the next steps for the construction of a hydroelectric dam on the Susitna River. The bill that would be read into the legislative record when the session begins would authorize the Alaska Energy Authority to construct the dam and would give the agency the money from the Rail Belt Energy Fund to begin work. One Anchorage representative has pre-filed legislation to stop a common car dealer practice that he says has no basis other than pure profit for the dealer. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
Democrat Les Guerra wants to prohibit a common fee tacked on to the majority of dealer-purchased cars.
Car dealers should be able to charge whatever they need to charge, but that should be in the price they negotiate. We want to stop them from adding the so-called dock fee.
Guerra says the documentation, or dock fee, if charged, arises after the car price is fixed and the paperwork is being done. It then appears in a bundle of additional costs.
Most dealers will then add what they call a dock fee, title, and registration. Title and registration, those are government fees that nobody's making a profit off. They just do the title and registration fee for you. Many consumers think that the dock fee is an official government fee. It's nothing. It's just a made-up name that is additional profit.
Guerra's bill came about after he was contacted in December by Matt Wallace, executive director of Alaska Public Interest Research Group. Wallace sent the legislator the initial results of a study on car dealer fees.
We're in the midst of a survey of, you know, many car dealers in Alaska, but of the results so far, the vast majority do charge these document fees.
The initial results show that most of the dealerships listed were in Anchorage, with 3 in Wasilla and Palmer. Of the total 24 auto sales businesses contacted, 18 had document fees. Wallace questioned the fee amounts and the notification procedures.
Car dealers will say it's for overhead and the cost of essentially doing the paperwork that's required to process the transaction. But in our initial survey, you know, we found that these fees in Alaska are usually $200, sometimes $300, and you know, that's definitely, we would argue, probably not what it costs to, you know, to file a couple of forms for the buyer of the car. And moreover, if it is overhead or if it's a part of the dealer's cost of doing business, that should be reflected in the final price of the vehicle, not sort of snuck in at the closing table in the back end in the fine print.
Calvin Worthington, CEO and president of Cal Worthington Ford, says at least at his dealership, dock fees are openly exhibited.
It's a fully disclosed number that we make public on all of our advertisement that is written on every car.
According to the research group, the Ford dealership's dock fee is $199. Worthington says that amount reflects the company's expenses.
It's basically a document preparation fee. It's all of the costs that are involved in everything that's used to pull the deal. There's costs from pulling the credit. We have an office staff of 7 people that all they do is process deals, process DMV. There's a lot of hidden costs that the dealership bears.
He adds the dock fee itself is non-negotiable.
We charge the dock fee on every deal, but sometimes we'll negotiate, go, okay, if you really are opposed to paying this dock fee, maybe we can take $200 off the car, but it's still the dock fee gets charged.
If at Worthington the dock fee is non-negotiable, that's not necessarily the case at other dealerships. In the Alaska Public Interest Research Group initial results, one dealership commented, quote, "It's a negotiable fee. We'll probably waive it to make a deal." And although almost all the dealerships said everyone charges a documentation fee, that's not accurate. The group survey did show those half dozen who did not, and one local auto sales business, not in the survey, uses dock fees as an advertising positive, at least in reverse. Its website proclaims, "Check us out. We have no dock fees." In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
The Trans-Alaska Pipeline is scheduled to be shut down tonight to address a leaky pipe. The feeder line is seeping oil at Pump Station 1 at Prudhoe Bay, and Alyeska spokeswoman Michelle Egan says the plan is to bypass it with a new section of steel pipe that was prefabricated in Fairbanks this week.
Crews will get to work fitting up the 157-foot bypass pipe. And we anticipate that the shutdown will take in the area of 36 hours.
It will be the second tap shutdown this week. The pipeline was idled for 84 hours when the leaky feeder pipe was discovered last Saturday, then restarted at limited throughput due to freeze concerns. Temperatures have cooled considerably on the North Slope in recent days, but Egan says this weekend shutdown should be short enough to avert a pipeline freeze-up.
We've moved throughput rates of close to 400,000 barrels a day. So that's helped, but we will still have to carefully monitor the temperature of what's in the pipe.
Egan says there's also no longer concerns about ice being pushed by two pipeline cleaning pigs that were in the line.
Both the pig that was headed for Pump Station 8 has been received, and the pig that was on its way to Valdez has also been received. So that's a big, big move for us in this.
Meanwhile, workers have picked up thousands of gallons of leaked crude this week at Prudhoe Bay as it seeped from the bad feeder line into the basement of a pump house. No oil has escaped to the environment, but the situation has substantially reduced Alaska's crude production and mobilized an over 500-person response. Concerns about the line's maintenance are prompting a watchdog group to conduct an audit of Alyeska's marine terminal in Valdez. KCHU's Tony Gorman reports.
I think we've got just a couple of takeaway points.
That's Mark Swanson describing the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council's reaction to the pipeline's recent leak. He is president of the nonprofit organization that has promoted the environmentally safe operation of the pipeline's marine terminal in Valdez since its formation after the Exxon Valdez oil spill. Swanson says the RCAC has scheduled an external audit of the terminal's maintenance to prevent similar incidents from happening. He says the RCAC believes the audit will be beneficial to the public and Alyeska.
So it'll be useful to examine if there are similar outdated assumptions in any terminal contingency operations that need to be reexamined, and in light of reduced flow over the years and reduced workforce on the pipeline and here at the terminal over the years, and of course aged infrastructure and some controls now being remotely operated from Anchorage as opposed to Valdez.
Swanson says the RCAC doesn't expect to find any big problems on the terminal, but feels it merits a closer look.
Historically, the terminal, it's worth noting, has had fewer maintenance related issues or failures than the pipeline itself over the years, and would like to maybe humbly think to some degree that's been influenced by 20 years of informed citizen involvement with the regulators and operators.
Swanson says the audit wouldn't take a lot of time. He says the bulk of the work will happen this spring. The audit was planned and funded by the RCAC last September. Last month, the council found a prime contractor and is looking for subcontractors to complete the project. The audit is slated to end this summer. Reporting from Valdez, I'm Tony Gorman.
The Alaska Bar Association is offering a free legal clinics on Monday, January 17th, in honor of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. The clinics will take place in Anchorage at the Mountain View Community Center from 1 to 7 p.m., in Juneau at the Diamond Courthouse, and in Fairbanks at the Rabinowitz Courthouse. Free legal consultation and referrals will be available in the areas of family law, landlord-tenant issues, and public benefits. About half of Alaska's 80,000 low-income citizens are expected to need legal help in any given year. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, racers young and mature prepare for the Alcan 200 snow machine race.
We've got an old school member who's coming out. He just had his 70th birthday in October.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
Developers of the Donlin Creek Gold Mine and the City of Bethel are trying to explore a potential partnership for a port facility in the lower Kuskokwim River. But the first attempt to formalize negotiations failed at the council's last meeting. The mining company was attempting to get the city to sign a non-disclosure agreement. KYUK's Shane Iverson has more.
At Bethel City Council's last meeting, the council unanimously voted to not sign a non-disclosure agreement with the Donlin Creek Company. The agreement would have been the first step towards forming a partnership. Donlin Creek's Mary Sattler spoke before the council at that meeting.
I think it's just common business practice that there is some level of confidentiality before you get, you know, too far in the process.
Donlin needs a partner, or maybe several, in the downriver area if they're going to develop their site 200 miles above Bethel on the Kuskokwim. The agreement before the council was described by Sattler as a boilerplate non-disclosure form, with some language aimed at allowing the city to disclose some information it's required to by law. Council member Heather Pike.
Unfortunately, this really doesn't apply to us because we really can't have any closed session or any kind of back and forth with Donlin Creek that isn't a matter of public record. Mm-hmm. So our hands are kind of tied to state law.
Mayor Eric Middlebrook said that signing the form would be an advantage only to the mining companies.
It's kind of a negotiating tactic, and I don't think to agree to that is in our best interest.
A non-disclosure form would limit the type of information that the city could release about the project. Councilmember Rick Robb has been a vocal supporter of the mine, but he also voted against signing the form.
I don't want to stop the dialogue. I want to continue the dialogue and continue discussions. But I think this particular document, as it stands, I mean, I don't think we can do it.
The council said they'll look at other options with their private attorney. Sattler said that Donlin Creek understands that city governments and private companies have different legal obligations.
The company is fine if you would like to find a way to not have this a part of moving forward with the city or have a different kind of document.
Six council members voted to oppose signing the agreement, with council member Tundi Rogers abstaining. I'm Shane Iverson.
A big science meeting that happens every year in Anchorage is bigger than ever this year. Sponsored by the North Pacific Research Board, the 9th Annual Marine Science Symposium is where the results of this year's scientific field research are revealed. The board pays for a lot of that research from a federally designated fund, but in recent years, there have been significant infusions of research money from offshore oil and gas lease bids, the National Science Foundation, and other agencies. Among other things, the symposium will feature the observations from a second year of biological and chemical surveys of the Chukchi Sea, where Shell bid close to $2 billion for oil leases. Presidential Oil Spill Commission member Fran Ulmer will talk about that body's findings announced this week in Washington. The latest field observations of Pacific walrus will be shared. Withdrawing sea ice has forced many female walrus to shore to have their calves, and there are signs that they have been increasingly moving into Russian waters. A lot of fishery science will be presented as well. Clarence Potsky has been executive director of the research board for 9 years and has seen a lot of growth in that time.
You take a look at it, and you find that there is no other place that you can go to find the concentration of scientists doing research on the marine ecosystems off Alaska. And this is built up from, say, 300 to 400 principal investigators, research scientists that would come in years ago, to now we have something like over 870 scientists and others that are registered for this. The public needs to be there. It's we're going to be in the Hotel Captain Cook. Room is limited, but come in and grab a seat. You should be there early. It's going to be an absolutely wonderful array of scientists talking about their work, and plus there'll be poster sessions too.
The poster sessions take place in the evening. The scientists put up posters describing their work and are available to talk with anyone who comes by. Scientists will present a proposal for an array of observing equipment in the Bering Strait, and the Calista Elders Council will present its plan for documenting indigenous Yupik knowledge and integrating it with scientific observations. The Fairbanks Borough Assembly heard public testimony on the latest version of an air quality control ordinance last night. The law aimed at bringing Fairbanks in compliance with federal fine particulate pollution standards was amended in response to a measure approved by local voters last fall that stops the borough from regulating the use of heating devices. Fairbanks resident David Troop suggested an emissions tax as a way to encourage people to burn clean.
The tax rate could be exponential to the amount of particulate to make it more economical for heavy polluters to remove the unhealthy heating byproducts. Tax monies could be directed to provide for the purchase, installation, and maintenance of high-efficiency particulate air filtration systems for our schools first and then for the rest of our public buildings.
Former Borough Air Pollution Control Commission member Michael Pollan, who recently completed his term, said the commission grudgingly approved the proposed amendments, which strip limits on smoke output and fines for violating them, but cautioned that the problem still has to be dealt with.
We could have some serious consequences for large new industrial developments that try and come into the area that have an air quality permit that they have to address under the ADEC regulations. We've already heard of, and you will see more people leave this place. Finally, I would like to mention the potential effect on the BRAC, which is coming up about the same time. Environmental compliance is one of 8 issues that is considered in the BRAC process.
Holland said the borough is not on track to meet a 2014 deadline for a plan to address local PM2.5 pollution. The borough's only remaining tools are non-punitive measures, local education, and a wood stove and boiler repair, removal, or replacement program. Another Fairbanks resident who testified last night, Tim Suvdi of Fairbanks, questioned the borough's tactics.
How are you going to implement a supposedly voluntary program if you go and you basically have the administration saying, okay, we're going to give you X amount of money for swapping out your stove, but in 6 months we're going to come on in, intrude upon your person and your property to check this, check that.
Hundreds have already taken part in the changeout program, receiving cash and tax breaks to fix or replace inefficient stoves and boilers. But the borough estimates it needs to swap out thousands of older heating appliances to fully address the problem. The amended air quality ordinance was advanced by the Assembly for a public hearing at the January 27th Assembly meeting. The Alcan 200 snow machine race turns a stretch of the Alcan Highway into a racetrack this weekend for the 42nd year in a row. Tara Bicknell from KHNS and Haines has more.
With less snowfall lately, race coordinator Angie Robinson assures the course will still take place on the road and not on the alternate route that's been used a few times in the past.
You know, there is some bare spots. They will have to race on bare pavement. Hopefully, it's not long stretches of pavement is what we're hoping for. But, you know, with it blowing as much as it is up top, we're kind of hoping that maybe it'll blow some loose snow back down onto the course.
Classifications remain the same for possibly the last year, since the race is getting more and more four-stroke machines with turbos. But there are no rule or registration changes. The halfway point is back to its original location at Desyash Lake area after a change for last year only. But it's not just about the race. The festivities begin Friday night with the Calcutta auction at 5:30 p.m. at the Fogcutter Bar. It's open to the public and is a lively event to raise money for racers and winnings for the right bidders. The race itself begins Saturday morning at 10 a.m. and starts to finish around 1:30 or 2 p.m. with a Haines Highway road closure throughout the day.
Spectators are not allowed to cross the border and go up and spectate from roadways. The highway is closed. You either can spectate from the start-finish line or the Desyash point.
The Saturday night banquet and awards ceremony begins at a later time this year, giving racers and spectators more time to get back from the day's event. Registrations open at the Calcutta auction, but the locals who are expected to race this year include recent competitors Chris Brooks and Zach and Tyler Farron, first-year racer Jack Smith Jr., and one racer whose name hasn't been on the roster for quite a few years.
We've got an old-school member who's coming out. He just had his 70th birthday in October, and that would be my dad, Doc Hess. He decided that just because he turned 70 doesn't mean he can't race. It's pretty funny because he just, you know, I think he just wanted to prove the fact that, you know, just because he was older doesn't mean he can't do it. And as far as I know, I believe he may be one of the oldest racers in the history of the race itself.
That report from Tara Bicknell in Haines.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline with over 700 employees.
No other port in Alaska is building a 100 rail car loop like the one going in at Port McKenzie. Exporting natural resources from rail to ship will be more efficient than ever. A single limestone deposit in the interior could mean a cement industry in Alaska. Port McKenzie Rail, hundreds of millions in state revenues, thousands of jobs. This message sponsored by the Matanuska-Susitna Borough.
The National Park Service is looking to the lower 48 for input on plans to increase the fee for scaling North America's highest peak and nearby Mount Foraker. Public meetings are planned for Seattle and Golden, Colorado next week. Meetings were held in Alaska last month. Park Service spokeswoman Chris Pfister says the current $200 fee doesn't come close to covering the $1,200 per climber it costs to run the mountaineering program.
It's a very specialized program. I mean, we have a staff that we have to have acclimated and trained to be able to work on up on the mountain. Obviously, a lot of this covers the preventative that each climber participates in, which includes information they get ahead of time and also an orientation when they actually arrive in Alaska to start their climb.
More than 1,000 people try to scale Denali each year. The fee, which started out at $150, used to cover about 30% of the program's cost, but now, even after being up to $200, covers just 17%. Pfister says raising the climber fee isn't the only option, but that they've already tried to maximize efficiency and feel the agency is offering what's required to run a responsible mountaineering program.
We do use a lot of volunteers for part of our program. We have looked at things in terms of making things more efficient. But, you know, we feel that bottom line, we need to keep this mountaineering program whole. And so in order to do so without changing things, you know, some of that money, if we can't recover it some other way, it does have to come at the cost of impacting other programs in the park.
Pfister says Denali's climbing program was ramped up in the mid-1990s due to increasing numbers of deaths on the mountain. Pfister says the world's high peaks where fees are charged, Denali is on the low end. Any increase in the climbing fee eventually approved would not go into effect until the 2012 season. The U.S. Coast Guard is looking into the death of a commercial diver harvesting sea cucumbers near Metlakatla. Ketchikan Marine Safety Detachment staff traveled to the southern southeast Alaska city to investigate the incident. There's no word yet of what they found. The agency reports the man was diving off the Island Dancer, a 68-foot fishing tender, early Wednesday afternoon. Crew members said he surfaced after a dive, pulled off his mask, and sank back into the water. The crew pulled him out using his air hose and attempted to revive him without success. The death took place in Chester Bay near Metlakatla. The Tsimshian community is on a net island about 15 miles south of Ketchikan. The Coast Guard had no further information about their investigation as of this afternoon. Metlakatla's police department was also involved in the investigation but had no comment on the effort. A Delta Junction man died Wednesday of injuries he sustained in a vehicle accident on an icy stretch of the Richardson Highway south of Birch Lake. It was the latest of several accidents in the area in recent days. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Troopers say 62-year-old Robert Peter Alain apparently lost control of his 1979 Ford pickup at mile 292 of the Richardson Highway on an uphill, curvy stretch of the highway on Tenderfoot Hill. Emergency personnel got the call at about 1:17 p.m. and pronounced Alain dead at the scene. Troopers say Alain was not wearing a seatbelt. They do not believe alcohol was a factor. That was the third wreck in 3 days on that same icy stretch of the Richardson, all involving residents of Delta. There are numerous icy patches all along the Richardson Highway between Shaw Creek and North Pole. Motorists are advised to drive carefully. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Len Anderson and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Tony Gorman in Valdez, Shane Iverson in Bethel, Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Tara Bicknell in Haines, and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
When you file online for your PFD, you can donate to any of the 159 Alaska organizations that provide help to individuals and families affected by a disability or mental illness. Get more with your PFD when you pick, click, give. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation and the Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust.
The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2011 PFD and consider sharing a portion with your favorite charity through Pick, Click, Give. More information at alaska.pfd.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska. Help manage subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing in Alaska. Apply for a seat on your local Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council. The councils provide critical advice to the Federal Subsistence Board on the management of subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing on federal public lands. The deadline to apply is February 18th. For more information, call 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. This message sponsored by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.